Now there's a woman on my block, just sitting there, facing the hills, saying, who's gonna take away?
Who's gonna take away?
Who's gonna take away?
Who's gonna take away?
These lives are sinking. Now he's helping for destruction.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Muraf Juwajati, who is a Syrian-born specialist on Middle East affairs, particularly Syrian politics. He is currently professor of Middle East Studies at the National Defense University's Near East and South Asian Center for Strategic Studies. He also served as the National Program Officer in Syria for the United Nations Development Program and as an advisor to the Syrian delegation to the Middle East peace talks. Welcome to Background Briefing, Muraf Juwajati.
Thank you very much.
And there are two conflicting, not I don't know how conflicting they are, but there are two things that the United Nations are seen to be pushing here. On the one hand, the former head of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, has a peace plan that's largely endorsed by Russia and China. And Ban Ki-moon is on his way to Baghdad for the Arab League summit, where he's going to join in trying to sell that. And I believe the Arab foreign ministers in Baghdad have said that they are going to go aboard that plan. But while this is happening, then you have the UN. Human Rights Commissioner Navi Pillay accusing the Syrian government of systematically detaining, torturing, and killing children. I'm just astounded that cynicism seems to be overwhelming morality here.
It is astounding. One hand does not know what the other hand of the UN is doing. Kofi Annan's plan, I think, was worded with a lot of care in order to get Russia and China on board. It is, of course, you remember those two states that had vetoed at least twice in the Security Council condemnations of Assad and any talk of Assad stepping aside. So he wanted very much Russia and China to be on board. The problem with that is that in the Kofi Annan plan, it calls for a political dialogue between the Assad regime and the opposition, therefore discounting really any accountability to the Assad regime. No accountability for the murder of 9,000 Syrians, no talk of Assad stepping down. So although Kofi Annan had very much Russia and China in mind, he didn't have the demands of the Syrian people in mind, and this is what matters most. The Assad regime should be made accountable, and there should at least be wording of him stepping aside in view of forming a transitional government in Syria.
But Kofi Annan's plan is an absolutely non-starter, given that as a precondition, the opposition is being asked to surrender to a regime that's killing its own people and trusts that the Assad clan will have any interest in reform. It seems like a very cynical ploy pushed by the Russians and the Chinese and Assad to basically say, see, we tried to have a peace plan and the opposition rejected it.
That's right. And Assad is only stalling for time. He has had now a year to implement serious reforms. He has not. He has accepted the plan only orally, and the ink did not dry on the acceptance of the Annan plan, that the Assad regime is continuing its violence against Syrian civilians. Today, the cities of Homs was bombarded once again, along with the city of Saraqib and the city of Idlib and the countryside of Hama. There were countless killings today. And Assad has accepted initiatives in the past, and we know that he has been lying. And this is, I think, one more lie. He is simply stalling for time in the hope that this rebellion against him will be crushed.
So, Muraf Juwajati, just on this, trying to figure out more about this kind of the two faces of the UN, if you will, Kofi Annan and Navi Pillay, the UN Commissioner for Human Rights. Navi Pillay is describing what's happening to the children in Syria. what they've done to the children for whatever purpose in large numbers. Hundreds detained and tortured. It's just horrendous. Children shot in the knees, held together with adults in really inhumane conditions, denied medical treatment for their injuries, either held as hostages or as sources of information. And then he goes on to say that the United Nations Security Council has enough reliable information to refer the Assad regime to the International Criminal Court for its human rights abuses. So is there a possible two-track here, that you've got the cynical Assad Russian-Chinese track that's designed to go nowhere, or even though the Arab foreign ministers appear to be taking it up? I don't know how they're going to do that, because Syria's not even present because they've been kicked out of the Arab League. But just walk us through the possibilities of a two-track here.
Well, again, the track of Kofi Annan is a non-starter, as you rightly said. It is not going to be accepted by the opposition, especially that the murders continue. It might be accepted by Russia and China, but then again, these are not the victims of the Assad regime's brutality. Assad rightly belongs in the International Criminal Court. What is going on, simply, and here I don't want to employ harsh rhetoric or propaganda, but it is mass murder, including children. So again, I do not see how Kofi Annan seriously thinks that the Assad regime is going to sit at the table with the opposition movement, that they are going to resolve this, and in the end, hug and kiss. It is truly very cynical. It is simply a non-starter.
But Mourav Joujati, it's not just Kofi Annan. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on Syrian President Bashar Assad today to implement a peace plan proposed by the UN Arab League envoy Ban Ki-moon. I strongly urge President Assad of Syria to put those commitments into immediate effect. There is no time to waste. This is what he said at a press briefing in Kuwait just before he went to Baghdad for the Arab League summit, which began today.
Unfortunately, there has been, I think, a stepping back, not only by Ban Ki-moon, but by the international community. The position of the United States has been and continues to be that Assad must step aside. And this position is shared by most in the international community. They, however, I think, want to give one voice, a united voice, a united message to Assad. Well, in that united voice, they have watered down very much those earlier calls for him to step down. In fact, the Annan plan does not mention it at all. And again, Assad is monopolizing on this in order to gain time, in order to crush the rebellion. That simply is not going to work. And the international community, the United States and like-minded states, are going to have to step up to the plate, whether Russia and China like it or not.
Again, I'm speaking with Mourav Joujati, who is a Syrian-born specialist on Middle East affairs, particularly Syrian politics. He's currently a professor of Middle East studies at the National Defense University's Near East South Asian Center for Strategic Studies. And last November, President Assad agreed to a deal proposed by the Arab League, which actually is in many ways similar to the Annan plan, the withdrawal of government forces from residential areas, freeing political prisoners, and good faith negotiations with the opposition. And none of these promises were kept.
That's right. The Kofi Annan plan is based on this very Arab plan that you are mentioning, Ian, and the Arab plan, again, went nowhere. Assad did not withdraw heavy military equipment from cities. He did not allow unfettered access to the international media. He did not free any political prisoners. And therefore, that Arab initiative died, and the monitors were withdrawn and not to be brought back in. Kofi Annan based himself on that plan that failed. And so this tells me his plan is going to also fail. Why he is willing to give Assad more time is truly beyond me, and is really totally disingenuous, if not outrageous.
But assuming that because the Arab League foreign ministers and Ban Ki-moon have all said that they've endorsed this plan, and their meetings. They're presumably going to discuss it. The odd part about it is that Syria is not present, and Syria said that they won't deal with the Arab League because they've been suspended. They'll only deal with the individual states. So again, it seems to have provided them with some wiggle room. I mean, just to briefly go through the six-point plan. One, this is Annan's six-point plan. One, Syrian-led political process to address the aspirations and concerns of the Syrian people. Two, UN-supervised cessation of armed violence in all its forms by all parties to protect civilians. Three, all parties to ensure provision of humanitarian assistance to all areas affected by the fighting and implement a daily two-hour humanitarian pause. Four, authorities to intensify the pace and scale of release of arbitrarily detained persons. Five, authorities to ensure freedom of movement throughout the country of journalists. Six, authorities to respect freedom of association and the right to demonstrate peacefully. He hasn't done that. He's never agreed to that in the past. Is there any way that he can agree with it or would be forced to agree with it if it has the imprimatur of the UN, which it seems to have, and the Arab League?
He will do what he has done already, which is to agree to it orally and to violate each and every one of the clauses that you read. He will not allow peaceful demonstrations without shooting at them. He has not withdrawn equipment from cities. He will not allow the access to journalists and so on and so forth. Because if he does in the end, it will be a carnival-like atmosphere in Syria wherein all Syrian cities and all Syrians would be demonstrating peacefully. That would be the end of his regime. If the international media were to go in and to document the mass murder that has been taking place by his security forces, he will be done in. So, again, on the one hand, he is going to agree, as he has in the past. On the other hand, he is not going to do anything. And in the meantime, this is only going to gain him time in order to kill more civilians that are protesting against him.
So what's happening with the opposition then, Muraf Shishadi? They've been meeting in Istanbul this week, and they apparently have agreed to work under the one umbrella. Is that any? Do you have any more information of what they've agreed to?
I know of at least 40 small groups and movements that have all agreed that the Syrian National Council is the sole and legitimate representative of the Syrian people. The Syrian National Council is the interlocutor. It is the future leaders of Syria. It's not all good news. There are some elements that have walked out, namely the Kurdish elements. And my guess is it's because the Kurdish movement know that they have, let's call it, a swing vote now. They can make or break this revolution, really. And so they are trying to maximize their demands. They are seizing the moment in order to get all the demands that they want from the Syrian National Council. But overall, I believe the Syrian opposition today is more united than it has ever been before. This is not to say that it is totally united, but again, it has united more than ever before. And when the Friends of Syria will meet, and this is a group of at least 70 states in early April in Istanbul, I think they would be facing a Syrian National Council that is truly the interlocutor of the Syrian people.
Well, just in closing, Muraf Shishadi, this whole thing's starting to feel like Bosnia in the 1990s and Kosovo, exactly the same MO, particularly in the part of the West and NATO and the United States. We can't do anything. Terrible things are happening. It's true. Genocide is going on, but it's too complicated, and we don't know who the arms would go to if we sent arms in. All of exactly the same arguments. And frankly, I don't know whatever happened. The Saudis and the Qataris were supposed to be helping out the Syrian opposition. There's no evidence. I mean, all the reports I get is that the fighters are being routed because they don't have any weapons, and they're just brave people, you know, standing up against a modern professional army with pea shooters.
Ian, I am in total agreement with you. This is a Kosovo repeat. At the time, the international community was very hesitant. In Kosovo, there was increasing radicalization as a result of the murders that were taking place there. In addition, there was the influx of Islamist fighters that went to Kosovo, which got the attention of the international community. And then they intervened. And when they did intervene, the murders stopped. So I think we are in a phase now where the international community, particularly Western states, are beginning to be jolted into action because murder is taking place before them. A regime that is not at all hesitant or reluctant to use weapons against civilians. With regards to the Saudis and the Qataris, I believe that they are going to finish with this Arab summit and see what comes out of the Friends of Syria. But I think that they are more determined than other Arab states to facilitate at least the arming of the Free Syria Army so that it can, so that there can be somewhat of a balance of power with the forces of Assad.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today. Mourav Jouajadi, again, Syrian-born specialist on Middle East affairs, particularly Syrian politics, and currently professor of Middle East Studies at the National Defense University's Near East South Asia Center for Strategic Studies. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.